Sega's Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here along with Sin City Steve, and we are here with the one and only Adrian Quest. What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
What up, yo? How are you guys?
It's Sunday in pandemic, so I guess we're doing as good as we can do.
Chilling,
right?
Speaking of that, how has that been for you in terms of you've gotten back to doing some filming? What is that? Has that been difficult adapting to an empty arena, or is it just same as usual? Everything, you know, you just go out and perform as you can.
You most definitely have to work a different way. You know what I'm saying? So like, you're missing the energy from the crowd, which, like, at some points of the matches, you feed off the energy of the crowd, especially right. If, like, it's a part of, like, the match that has, like, crowd interaction. Like, yeah. You kind of have to, like, take that out, like, completely. Like, I have this part of the match where I, like, look to the crowd and I call out for the homies, and, like, the whole crowd says for the homies, which I miss. And so, like, I've had to, like, completely scrap that from my arsenal just because I'll look stupid, like, I feel like I would, you know, because it's like, I'm always like looking for that, you know?
Sure.
When I do it, but. When you
talk about something like that, what, in terms of your philosophy or the psychology of a match, what does that do for stuff like comeback spots? You know, the stuff, like you said, the homie stuff, that's something that's unique to you, but all wrestlers, you know, have to go through cutoffs and comebacks, and it's really hard with no crowd there to be a baby and try to come back. Do you have to use almost a little bit of your imagination to kind of just embrace the fact that, hey, you know, or are you buying into the reality of what's going on, basically?
I would say buying into the reality of what's going on. You use, like, your own energy, you know, like your root. Like, if it was, like, how would I explain? Like, your real fire that you have, you
right.
know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, your own passion for, I don't know, the moment, or, you know, stuff like that. But it is definitely hard, like, to try to tap into that. It took me a few matches to, like, really, like, get the structure of how these matches are now.
Yeah.
Definitely, man. And now, recently, you've been a regular on NJPW Strong. Tell us a little bit about your experience working for NJPW.
It's been beautiful, bro. Since the age of 13, that was my dream company to go to.
Awesome.
And so that's always been my number one goal, is to get my foot in the door with that company specifically. I've always been infatuated with, like, the Japanese culture and Japanese wrestling. So I've loved it, bro. Been loving it.
That's awesome, man. And now, obviously, the thing that really kind of stands out from what you said is that from the beginning, New Japan was the company that really kind of, you know, fueled the fire, if you will. What was it? Was it the general culture, or was it, you know, something in the work rate or the presentation? What really kind of drew you to New Japan as opposed to another company?
It was definitely the aesthetic, like the work rate. Like, so I was, like, watching those. By this time, there was YouTube, you know. I wasn't a video trade taper, you know, or whatever. But I had YouTube, fortunately. So, like, I would see, like, the J-Cup matches where it's, like, Hayabusa versus Jushin Thunder Liger, or, like, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like, those types of matches, like, Great Sasuke and, like, Black Tiger, of course. You know, all those dudes.
Yep.
Yeah, so, like, the aesthetic of how they were presented and how it almost seemed like a Street Fighter, like tournament, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how I seen it, you know?
Awesome, man.
what was it like for you? You started at a very young age, you know, like you said. Right. Not only were you, was it your goal, but you facilitated, you know, by starting to work at 11 in ring and training.
Right.
What was it like for you to have a Jesse Hernandez as the mentor, as the trainer, and B, to put on a lucha mask at 13 and go into the ring in front of a crowd and wrestle your first match?
Yeah, like Jesse Hernandez is definitely like my Mr. Miyagi, you know what I'm saying? as far as like putting on a mask, I felt more comfortable and probably putting on a mask just because I was a real shy kid in general. You know, I was real shy, but I loved pro wrestling, and it was just like, it was real nerve-wracking, bro. It was real nerve-wracking. I remember my first show was at this, like, church. It was, like, this church event for some reason. And, like, yeah, and so, like, and it was, like, all filled with, like, kids, and it was, like, it was crazy because some of them were, like, my age, and it was just, like, a weird, you know, it was, like, a weird, like, it was, like, a weird thing, bro. It's, like, it's not normal at all, you know?
Well, that's that. I mean, that makes a lot of sense in terms of that, you know, that's not a reality that most people get a chance to experience, especially like you said, in front of kids your own age. What happened between the first match that you had, and like you said, you were shy as a kid, and developing into the Adrian Quest persona? What was your biggest steps getting over that shyness and being able to develop a character that is, you know, pretty confident and a little bit of cockiness to it, which is awesome?
Right. So I would say I was shy only in the sense of, like, because you're working with a bunch of, like, older people that know what they're doing, and like I was very, like, I knew that I was real young, so I was like real shy to like even like saying hi to like all these dudes that I would have to work with, you know. And it was just like, but like at home or at school, I was definitely not shy. I was like actually a real bad kid. I was, you know,
I'm not gonna let you get past that one. What is the worst thing that you did as a real bad kid?
These are so many. let me see. There's so much. I can't really pinpoint what was the worst thing I've done, but even like when like I would like my mom would make me go to church, like as a kid, you know, like I couldn't like just like sit still and just like stand up like. Like, I would have to do something mischievous. Like, I would, like, go underneath the seat. And this is when I was, like, real young, like, 5 or 6. Like, I'd go underneath the seats, like, start looking in, like, other women's purses for gum or candy. Like, or, you know, like, or I'd, like, pull their hair, like, behind the chair and, like, dip, you know? Stuff like that. I was a terrible kid, bro. Ryan.
I just love the idea that it was a church.
Yeah.
What has it meant to you to get a chance to tag with Andy Brown, and you've been tagging for a little while? Has the chemistry that you guys have in the ring now, did it take a while to develop, and were you more so focused on wanting to be a singles wrestler, and then the opportunity just happened where they had nothing else for you and for Andy, and you guys kind of came together?
Before we even like tagged, we like had real good chemistry, like on like training matches and stuff like that. So like I feel like there was like a we had chemistry, I would say, like against each other at first,
right?
Like working with each other. But against each other, I should say. But like when it came to like when we first got as a tag team, it was actually really like because we had totally different ideas of like what we wanted to do.
Sure.
And so, but after a while, we like kind of like learned to what to cut out, like, or what like he or me should cut out for each other. You know what I'm saying? So just learning how to work with each other. You know, so I would say that working as a tag chemistry wasn't there right away.
Yeah.
But you just work at it. You know?
Yeah, definitely, man. And obviously, I mean, you've worked extensively for, you know, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. You've appeared on Primetime Live. Right. We've had David Marquez on the show, and he's been a great visionary for years. Right. Talk to us a bit about what it's been like to work for Mr. Marquez.
It's been dope, man. He's has a good eye for people he wants to like bring in, and, you know, just how he carries himself, you know, how he cares for the guys he brings in. So it's pretty cool, bro. He's a nice guy.
Awesome, man.
Do you get a chance when you're, you know, hanging around all day to observe and kind of take in what's going on the production aspect of you know, a tape day? Is that something that interests you, or are you just more focused just on the in-ring work itself?
Like the production side, not so much. I do have like an interest in helping train people. Sure. I like to like when people like at training. So I'd say mostly the in-ring work is where my interest is at.
And how long did it take for you to develop but get to understand the layout of a match and the psychology that goes into it? Did it take you a while to really have it click? And was there a particular moment or match that you realized, okay, now all this stuff I've been learning for X amount of time makes sense to me?
Right, most definitely. Like, it did take some time just because the business had grown so differently from the time I was 11 years starting to train to like when I got back into wrestling at 18 or 19, I think it was. Because I took a 3-year break after from 16 to 18, I took a break from pro wrestling. I was in high school. I was just doing the high school thing. I was like skateboarding and stuff like that, partying. But like when I came back into the business, it was totally different. Like I was about 19 when I started training again and started doing matches again. It was like more of like the, I wouldn't say not there yet, but it was starting to get to like where it's like you have, you need to do something for the gifts or, you know, right, stuff like that. So I was for a while there, I was like trying to adjust to like being like doing a style where it was just like, all right, just go out and do everything you can. You know, and then it clicked as I just got older. Like I started learning things, you just learn. But I think a point where it clicked is when I developed the thing for the homies thing, you know, where it's like that's my biggest reaction in a match. You know, yeah. I wouldn't say my biggest, and it depends on match by match, you know, but like that's a part where it's like the people who do go to see me, that's the moment they wait for. You know, right, so they could have that real big crowd involvement part of the match where it's like they feel like they're part of the match, you know?
Sure. You know, a lot of times when you're just starting out, the best thing is having a support base around you. Were there or are there particularly, you know, like friends or family members who come to see you? And if so, does that, you know, do you find that where you, when you're working, you actually, you know, get a glimpse of them, and sometimes it just kind of can throw you when you see, like, right, you know, oh shit, you know, my grandma's in the audience in front row, you know?
I think it throws me off when I see actual family, just because I'm like, ah, it's my family. Like, I know I'm going to hear that at the next family barbecue. Like, you know, like, because, you know, they're not like a pro wrestler, so they're going to try to tell you what you did wrong or something, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, oh, you shouldn't have slammed it, you know? And it's like, yeah, like, shut up, you know? But like, when it's friends, I would say it's totally different, because it's like, especially with like when I was like, when I would party a lot, like I was like kind of like the crazy one of the group, you know, where it's like the most energetic. So, so it's probably like that part is just fun, because now they just see me on like a whole nother level of like energy when it comes to wrestling. But yeah, pretty much that.
Yeah, definitely, man. And now something else that's really noteworthy. I mean, I see the beanie. You've got your own clothing line called Bermuda. Tell us a little bit about that and what prompted you to create it.
So I grew up, like probably when I was like, I grew up with not much, you know? So like a lot of like the people in the industry come from nothing, you know? So, so when I was about like in seventh grade, I found this website called Tumblr, and Tumblr would show you like a bunch of streetwear, like, or like just depending on what you're into, like, you know, but like I came across like streetwear and then just falling in love with streetwear, and then trying to find brands that I could like afford, or like, you know, sometimes like my older sister would like buy me like a shirt or something, but like I just really got heavy into streetwear and wanting to like wanting more, like wanting to be a part of that, like, scene, you know. So as I got into high school, like I would go like to like different like streetwear pop-ups and stuff like that, or like I would do the like waiting in line at Supreme when I was in high school, or like the hundreds and stuff like that. I did all that, you know. Went to a lot of hip-hop shows where you would exchange like, oh, you got that, I got this, you know, like type thing. But when I was in high school, like I had the idea to actually want to start my own brand. I came up with the name in high school and all that. I blanked out. Yeah. So I came up with the name in high school and all that, but I just didn't know how to start it until I got out of high school and I actually like got a job at like a screen printing place and stuff like that. And just learned how to like cut out the middleman pretty much.
That's pretty dope, man. What does Bermuda stand for?
So it's like conquering the fear of the unknown. So it's something like you could relate to, like, you know, in the name itself, like the Bermuda Triangle, you know, like people don't know what they're getting into once they pass it. But for me, it's more so like as a kid, like everything was like, tomorrow was unknown of like, oh, are we going to get kicked out of the apartment, or, you know, like stuff like that. Or so like, it was just like, it's pretty much, to me, it's conquering the fear of the unknown, you know? And it's like, for people that grew up like me, pretty much, it's who I try to attract to.
Yeah. You also mentioned skateboarding. Are you still skateboarding? And if so, what's your go-to board?
Definitely a Baker. Baker skateboards. Yeah, my favorite brand growing up. No, I do not anymore, just because I have so much on my plate. And then if I were to really be committed to like skateboarding, I'd probably hurt myself. And you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, I'm no Darby Allin. You know, I can't just fall 20 feet and get right back up. Like, I started training at 11, so I'm feeling bumps from like when I was 12, you know? So, no, I definitely don't skate anymore, you know? Like, I can't. Like, it's just too much energy to put in to put in at an age like this where I have so much else going on, right. You know? That would be dope if I could, but no, it's out of the question now.
Who was your favorite skateboarder, and why was it Tony Hawk?
It was not Tony Hawk.
Woo!
But, like, as a kid, we play Tony Hawk Pro Skater, of course, but I loved Kareem Campbell. Yeah. And then as I got a little bit older, it was Omar Salazar.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's a good choice. Do you think that, you know, when you think about coming up with the character and the culture, do you think that if you were to go, let's say New Japan wants you to go, you know, tomorrow over to Japan to wrestle, but they want you to, you know, be the Dragon Master or something, you know, create just right. some totally different persona. What would be the difficulties for you to transition from the character you are now to something that's just totally different and opposite of who you are?
Right. There would be definitely a little change, but it's pro wrestling, so you got to learn how to adapt, you know? So adaptability, I think, is like a big part of like this industry, you know? Yeah, yeah, learn how to adapt. So I would just adapt, honestly. But I know there's like a lot of more marketability for what I'm doing now, because I can attract people who are like me, you know, into the business of pro wrestling. Like, I want to be the dude that's like, that puts people on to like, so pretty much I want to be the front man for the dude that's too afraid to say he likes pro wrestling. And for him to be like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He don't want to tell his homies like, oh, I watch pro wrestling on the low, you know what I'm saying? For him to be like proud of it, because it's like, no, look at this dude. This dude's into everything I am. And then, like, I want to be a representative for, you know, those dudes.
Right. And how is it, you know, working with guys like, let's say Danny Limelight, who, mm-hmm. you know, in the same way kind of uses his heritage for, you know, his character, is there, I mean, do you see similarities in guys who use, either their nationality or their upbringing or their street cred to what you're doing?
Yes and no. As far as like the nationality part, like, yeah. But I feel like there's no one in pro wrestling like me, you know? There's sure. not like, there's not like the streetwear dude that's been into like skateboarding, into like all types of different things. Like, so like, yeah, like yes and no, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
definitely, man.
And I mean, there's other wrestlers that do wear streetwear, but there's not like, I'm like in the game, I've studied the game, I've been, you know, like in high school, I was like at all these like events, you know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
And like all of those dudes in the streetwear world do not fuck with wrestling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if they do, it's like, oh, I got this vintage Stone Cold Steve Austin shirt. Like, yeah, I remember the Undertaker, Rey Mysterio, like Rey Mysterio, the dude with the, you know, like, so it's that when you go into that world, like, you know what I'm saying? Some, maybe some of them like watch wrestling, but like, I would like 99% of them don't, you know, yeah. They're like, oh, like I could resell you this old Stone Cold Steve Austin shirt for like $800. You trying to buy it, you know? So that's wrestling in that aspect.
Definitely, man. Now you actually bring up a really great point with that. Now, obviously we're at a time where, to be honest, the wrestling product is more accessible than it's ever been. You have so many different companies with so many different distribution platforms and, you know, all these different ways of taking in the product. Do you think that we're finally on the cusp of, you know, mainstream kind of breaking through again? Or do you think that that ship has sailed and we're not going to get mainstream again?
No, I do believe, especially with everything going on right now, like, there's so much wrestling right now. So it's like, it's almost unavoidable if you're like, even like if you're like scrolling through channels, it's like Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, you know, like AEW, you know, like WWE, and everyone knows WWE, you know, but they'll see like an Impact and then wrestling, you know, so everything has like a wrestling attachment to it. So like when you look it up on, you know, like when you're scrolling down the TV guide or whatever, you know, so I feel like there's a even bigger boom coming, you know. Which would be dope for like everyone in the industry and then outside of it. That's like, that brings more eyes onto wrestling, where wrestling like could collaborate with different brands and different things, like AEW and Clorox, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? That's like an example that, that probably would never happen, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, you know, like, whatever, like New Japan and Monster collab and, you know, or Red Bull collab, you know, like, it just opens eyes, you know, like, because, you know, it'd be dope to see another boom in pro wrestling, another major boom, I'd say, like, where it's almost pop culture again, you know?
Yeah.
What, for you, what has it been like in terms of training in the gym itself and trying to transform your body into, you know, a body type that a company like New Japan is now interested in, you know, taking you on and allowing you to wrestle? Do you spend, you know, 5 days a week, or what is a typical training regimen like for you, man?
Regimen for me for a company like New Japan is conditioning, because you're in with the best in the world. Like, literally, New Japan Pro Wrestling has the best athletes in the world, like, as far as, like, wrestling goes, you know? Like, their conditioning is A1. So conditioning is always something I'm, like, trying to get, like, really, 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 like, deep into, because you're wrestling with the best in the world, you know?
And what was it like for you during your high school years, being a mat wrestler? You know, I had experience in mat wrestling and found that the translation into a pro wrestling ring was definitely helpful. Of course, you had a little experience of pro wrestling before you got into high school itself. Was right. That an odd transition to go from, you know, a work to an actual shoot?
Right. It was definitely like a learning curve, but like, I would say both of them helped each other out. It's like, so like some of my pro wrestling's like things I've learned from pro wrestling definitely helped me with like high school wrestling. Yeah. Or that type of like wrestling, the mat wrestling. So, and then like vice versa, you know, so it just, they just ended up helping each other out. Like, so when I did go back to pro wrestling, I learned how to like move my body better, how to make certain moves look more realistic in the ring. Yeah.
Did you find when you were wrestling in high school, did you find that, or was there ever a time that you were in the middle of a match, let's say it's third period, and things are coming down the wire, where you had the audience energy help you fuel a comeback for a win? Or, you know, did you ever experience that? Because I know that was one of the things that I actually fed off of when I was, you know, a kid wrestling, and you hear the crowd and you just get so pumped up because there's so much behind you. You get that last adrenaline, you throw, you know, a headlock right. or something like that, and then all of a sudden you pin them and you win. Did you ever have an experience like that?
Not that I could remember, to be honest. If I'm being completely honest, I don't, a lot of those like matches, you have like your meets where it's just like the one mat and it's a school right. versus school. But for the most part, I did like the tournaments, you know, like, I mean, like, well, I did all of them, but like, from what I remember most was like the tournaments where it was like, it was like eight mats, and then there's eight different matches going on at yeah. once. So it's like those ones, like I couldn't even like really hear my coaches speak, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's like so much going on, like everyone's in the gym, and it's like, you know, there's like, there's eight different whistles blowing.
Yeah.
You know, so like, so those were just like kind of more like your own instinct.
And what's really funny about that is I always found it was just a strange feeling. Of your period ends, let's say it's the end of the first or second period, and you're getting up, and as you're getting up, like, you look and there's someone getting, you know, pinned over here, there's someone, the match yeah. is starting over there, and it's just the weirdest feeling because you want to keep your focus, but at the same time there's so much shit going around you, it's crazy. And you're right, you could barely hear, you know, what your coaches are saying, and you got three different whistles going off at the same time. That's craziness. Did you at any time realize that that chaoticness, that, you know, that atmosphere actually helps you, you know, when you get into a pro wrestling ring, in the sense that you know how to focus in now?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely, like, because I'm someone who likes pressure. Like, if there's no pressure on me, then it's probably, like, going to be, like, average, you know? So I always put pressure on myself in every situation. So that helps me, like, zone in really and really, like, tap into what I'm doing, is just putting pressure on myself to, like you know, just putting myself in scenarios where just, like, where it's like, oh, if you don't do this right, then this is going to happen, you know? So it's a good and bad way to think, but yeah, I definitely just put pressure on myself.
And I think, Steve, you got the most, as we wrap up here, you got the most important question, I think.
Oh, yeah. Without question, man, it's the most important question that I'm going to ask you today. And Adrian, obviously, you're a huge Dodgers fan. How great was it for you as a fan to experience them winning the World Series in 2020 of all years?
It was dope, but what wasn't dope was not being able to celebrate. And, like, I seen everyone going out and, like, you know, like, partying and stuff like that. It's like, oh, I want to party so bad, but we're in the pandemic and I have to keep, like myself safe, so that way the people around me are safe.
And, exactly,
you know, like, I have to prep for, like, wrestling matches and stuff like that, so it's like, I can't do these matches if I have COVID, you know? So it's like, it was super dope though. Like, it was just, like, a cool time, because like, these past few years we got so close, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it was dope, bro. I just wish I could celebrate and, you know, party with everyone, stuff like that.
And
yeah, hopefully, you know, once everything kind of subsides, I mean, we can get back to some shred of normalcy.
Right, most definitely.
And
hopefully soon, man.
To you, are you like me, where the Dodger dogs are the hot dog, or do you not buy into the Dodger dog hype?
I don't, honestly. I don't. And it's not that it's, like, a bad one. I don't really eat hot dogs in general. Like, I do, you know, but it's not, like, it to me, it's just another, like, it's just another hot dog. But it's not the elite hot dog, you know what I'm saying? But that's one question.
Hey, man, I did a thing that had Tommy Lasorda, and he was doing a Q&A, a sit down, and there was probably about 30 of us. It was a very exclusive group at Dodger Stadium, and I afterwards had gone in to use the restroom, and as I came out, I see Tommy as he's getting ready to leave, and I talked to him for a little bit, but the coolest thing about Tommy was he downed, like, 6 Dodger dogs.
Oh,
and, you know, he's basically walking out, you know, eating a Dodger dog, and it's like, man, that's the life, to be a hero to many fans, to get paid to go to an event and to get your favorite, you know, your favorite food handed to you. That's just amazing. When you think about yourself and that potential of becoming someone who is known throughout, you know, the country would be the best, throughout the world would be amazingly best. Mm. But just amongst the community in LA, do you think that if you were able to get enough attention, enough, I don't want to say fame in a negative way, but enough notoriety, that you would be able to give back to the community? And does that mean something to you?
Most definitely. And that time will definitely come. I know it will definitely come. And that's one thing, yes, I want to do. There's actually, I live in San Bernardino County, actually. Yeah. in San Bernardino is one of the highest, has one of the highest crime, actually the highest crime rate in California. So it, and it's like, there's a lot of poverty within San Bernardino. Yeah. So it'd be dope to like give back to like schools in within the San Bernardino County, you know, just whether it may be like, cause a lot of those kids don't have like good Christmases, for example, right. You know, to like just be able to donate and like, but like, cause I'm not a cheap gift giver anyways, like to like have all these like dope expensive toys from PlayStations to, you know, like stuff like that to like just give out for free, you know, to like people who are like, you know, yeah, less fortunate, you know?
Well, I think that's an awesome, you know, thing to shoot for. For the people who might not follow you on social media and might see this, where can they find you? What are your handles? And is there any place they can see your matches and maybe get your merchandise as well?
Right. So I do not have my own personal wrestling merchandise right now just because I focus on my brand itself. But
sure.
You could follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Adrian_Quest. That's both Instagram and Twitter. Facebook, I really don't use. It's kind of like whatever's for me. But as far as my brand, that's BURRMUDA_. And that's on Twitter and Instagram as well. And then they could buy stuff from Bermuda at BermudaOfficial.com.
Excellent. And of course, they can see you on the United Wrestling Network and right. Championship
and
Wrestling.
New Japan World, for sure.
And New Japan World. So, right. You know, I can't say enough about you in terms of, you know, being as young as you still are and, you know, learning the business at an even younger age. It looks like things are coming together for you, and it's it's amazing to see, brother, and we appreciate you taking the time, and hopefully today we're able to get the word out and maybe, you know, pick you up a new fan or two for life. So
most definitely,
that's, you know, that's what we're here to do, brother. And, you know, continued success, and you know, we'll check back in with you down the line, brother.
Word. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.